Welcome back, everyone. This is the Support Ops Podcast. It's a show devoted entirely to bringing some humanity back into the world of customer support. Check out the blog at supportops.co or follow along on Twitter. It's at supportops there. I'm your host, Chase Clemens, and this is episode number 20 with John Lane. He's part of the fantastic support team over at Harvest. I'm really excited to have him on. We've been talking about it for a while now. It finally, the stars aligned, everything worked. So, John, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on, Chase. Really looking forward to talking with you.
Awesome. So, easy question to start with. How's your day going?
Today's good. Sunny weather out here on the West Coast, so can't really complain. And it's been a good day at work.
Awesome. So give our listeners just a little bit of background on yourself, kind of just to set the stage so everyone knows who you are and where you're coming from.
Sure. I'm an ever-evolving person. I'm part of the support team over at Harvest, as Chase mentioned. I've been there for about 2 years, so I started in 2011. And my background before that was largely technical. I worked as a freelancer for a while, doing web development and that kind of stuff. And then noticed a job opening at Harvest. Had been using the tool myself, and so threw my hat into the ring to apply for that. And the rest is history, I guess, on that front.
That's awesome. It's one of those where you literally just kind of, you were using Harvest a little bit before, but that was kind of the big prompt, right? You were just using it, saw the opening, and was like, hey, let's do this.
Yeah, we joke a lot that a lot of the people we hire and end up is from our customer pool, which makes sense because, your customers are the people that know the product and that, either like or dislike the product and that kind of thing. But, of course, that isn't necessarily the best move for business, hiring your customers. But it's worked out all right so far.
That is kind of a flip from you paying them to them paying you, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
So I heard that you live on an island, right? So I'm guessing you're a remote worker?
I am, definitely, yeah. Harvest is based out of New York, and the island I'm referring to is not Manhattan in this case. I'm actually out on the West Coast, so I'm the furthest west of all Harvest employees, actually. I never really thought about that. We've got a distributed team, and so most folks are kind of scattered across North America. We've got a couple of new hires that are over in Europe as well.
So how's it working out so far with everybody kind of being remote? And I guess from support, that kind of works out because you've got people in Europe and then you covering the West Coast, so you capture a lot of time zones and a lot of open support hours, for lack of a better word, right?
Actually, our two new hires are part of the development team, so they're not actually in support.
Okay.
It does work out really well. Even between Eastern time zone and Pacific time zone, we end up with, a pretty good window, about a 12-hour window where we're providing live support for folks as stuff comes in. And so it works out really well. Harvest has always had a distributed team. We've always had folks that worked remotely right from, like, hire number one or hire number two wasn't local to New York. And so the whole company's kind of grown up around that. It's sort of been built around people that don't work locally in the office. And so we've got a really good kind of structure in place to accommodate that.
So let's get an idea of the size that we're talking about here. How big is your support team? How many customers are you talking to on average? That kind of thing.
Sure. The support team, including myself, and there's a small little tweak to that, is there's five of us in total. I'm actually sort of doing a part support, part quality assurance role now at Harvest, which is a really recent thing. It's just been going on for a couple of weeks now. So I guess you could say 4.5 people maybe in support. and then we've also got a dedicated community manager who makes us look good on the social networks and that kind of stuff.
And so with your 4.5, I'll give you 5. QA is support. You 5. Sure. So with that, how many customers are you dealing with every day?
On a daily basis, we deal with probably just over 100 tickets. And then we also offer phone support. So on a busy day, we'll have, probably 40 phone calls, something on those lines. On an insane day, like if there's sort of systems troubles or something like that, that number could spike. But on sort of an average busy day, it's about 40 phone calls. Just over 100 tickets thereabouts.
That's kind of cool. You're actually one of the few people we've had on the show that does live phone support. So I want to pick your brain on that one for just a second. So I'm a customer. I call into the number. Do I get routed to a specific person? Is it just a phone that everybody tries to grab? Or how's that kind of work?
Sure. The way our phone system's set up is we've got a 1-800 number that people can call into. When they call that number, the way we work in support is we use what we call anchor shifts. And so at any given time, there's somebody anchoring. And think in terms of news anchor on this. Mm-hmm. So that anchor person is on phones. They're also responsible for kind of triaging tickets, assigning things out to who the best person is to answer that, or answering it themselves if things are, you know, nice and quiet. And so whoever the anchor person is, and we schedule this throughout the day, so everyone's got about a 2-hour anchor shift that they cover. And whoever's on anchor, the phone rings for them first. If they're already on a call, it just backup rings to any of the other support agents that are online at that time. It's the way our phone system's set up, really.
That's kind of cool. That's pretty awesome. I've never heard the idea of an anchor person like that before. So is that something that's always been in place at Harvest, or is it kind of relatively new?
We implemented it when we hit about 3 support employees. So... Mm-hmm. Christopher, one of my coworkers, was support employee number one. And when he was doing things on his own, he was pretty much anchoring the whole time himself. Mm-hmm. Then I came on, and because there was just the two of us, we didn't really need any sort of formal structure. He is on the East Coast, I'm on the West Coast. It pretty much worked out that we had, you know, a few hours of overlap in the middle of the day, but we just sort of worked through things with that. When we hired the third person, Scott, he threw a wrench in the works. No, Scott, we had to come up with a better way of kind of organizing the workflow and figuring out who would be doing what at any given time. So that's where the idea came from.
So it's Scott's fault.
Yeah, it's Scott's fault.
So it's Scott. Mm. I can say that. I've talked to him a couple of times before, so it's okay.
Yeah absolutely.
So I first kind of, you know, I've heard about Harvest before because you've got a great integration with Basecamp and 37 Signals, and has always, you know, there's been a good relationship there. But then you started with the UserConf talk in New York, which kind of caught my eye because you're talking about the different caught my eye. I don't know which phrase works there, but you know what I mean. You talked about different apps and tools that you're using every day. So can you kind of share a couple of your favorite ones that you'd recommend anyone in support would start using? You know, kind of the ones that you would definitely say, no matter who you are, what company you work for, if you're in support, you need this app.
You bet. Yeah. I mean, there's a little variation to the way things work. We use Zendesk for our ticketing, so it's got an API, but pretty much I think all the major ones like Desk has an API, and a lot of the other platforms out there have APIs that you can tie into. And so what my UserConf talk was about was actually how to reduce your response times. How do you get faster at responding to customers? And part of that was the tools that we use to do that. And so one of the key tools that we use is this little utility on the Mac called GeekDesk, or GeekTool, my apologies. And GeekTool will actually display information right on your desktop. So you can have it run a little script on your machine, and it'll display the output of that right on your desktop and show you numbers or information. So for me, the way I use that is I've got a tie-in with the Zendesk API, and this little script just pulls the API to see how many open tickets, how many pending tickets, how many new tickets are sitting there, and it displays that right on my desktop. So I always have this awareness of, you know, how things are going and whether I need to be, you know, focusing more on tickets right now or whether things are slow and I can focus on other things without having to, you know, refresh Zendesk or, you know, click back and forth in Zendesk. And so that one's really key in kind of saving me a bunch of clicks. Another tool I use a lot of is, again, it's a Mac utility. It's called Alfred. And Alfred is basically just a keyboard launcher. So you can set up a keyboard combination, and it'll let you launch applications and do all kinds of different things with your machine just from your keyboard. And the way I use this in support is I've got some web searches built in there. And so I've got a web search built right into our knowledge base. I can key in a key combination. In my case, I've set it up as HHelp, so Harvest Help. And then I just type in the search term that I'm looking for, and it automatically launches a browser, takes me right to the relevant search results. And so if I'm looking for an answer for something, I don't have to be fumbling around looking for that answer. I can just find it and get back to the customer as quickly as possible.
That is absolutely awesome. Yeah. I never thought about using Alfred for that.
Yeah, it works out great. I kind of had a bit of a, you know, epiphany one day, and I thought, how can I cut this down instead of having to, you know, launch the web browser, go to the help section, key in the search phrase, submit the search. I can just use keyword combination, type in a couple words, hit enter, boom, done.
See, you solved a problem I didn't even know I had until today. That is fantastic. Because I always thought, you know, whenever we look through like our help documentation, that kind of thing, it's always kind of, like you mentioned, you go to the site, you pull up the search bar, and then you type your term, and then you look for it and everything else. If you're really lucky, one of the things that I really love about Chrome is you can just kind of start typing certain keywords, yep. And it'll bring up that previous URLs. But if you've wiped your browser recently, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Using Alfred, I love that. That's a great idea.
Yeah, it works great. And I mean, I've got other searches set up. So we've got a bugs database, things like that. So if I, you know, hear about a bug and it kind of tweaks a little memory for me, I'll usually search in the bugs database first to see if that's a known issue or not. And that kind of thing. And it's really versatile in that regard.
That's awesome. See, there's your tip for the day, folks. the big one that you need to take away right there. We can all go home. No, I'm just messing. One of the things that we were talking about, you know, when you and I first started talking via email a couple of months ago, Harvest was actually hit pretty bad when Hurricane Sandy struck. So can you kind of talk about what that was like for the team? How did you keep things going through all of this? Because your data center is right there in New York too, right?
It was.
Yeah.
We're neighbors with 37 Signals now. So we're hosted just outside Yay. Chicago with you guys. Yeah.
No hurricanes our way.
No. So, well, actually, I guess I should clarify that, because we do still have the data center in New York. It's our backup data center now. So we've got redundancy between two different data centers, just in case, you know, something happens, we can keep Harvest up and running for our customers. But to get back to Hurricane Sandy, yeah, it was really scary. I mean, it was sort of right around Halloween, if I remember right, in time frame. And, you know, the weather report says that this hurricane is going to hit New York. And you think that's the type of thing that only hits in Hollywood. Not hurricanes, but, you know, that type of mm-hmm. idea is the only thing that would come out in Hollywood. And so probably about a third of our company is actually based in New York. And as well, at the time, all of our servers were located in a data center in Manhattan. And so, you know, what can you do to prepare for a hurricane, really? Well, we did everything that we could. We put in some communication plans ahead of time. So I was actually, because I was located the furthest away from the hurricane, I was kind of the contact person. So we set up a schedule where everybody would check in with me either over phone or text message, or if they could, you know, email, that kind of thing, on a regular basis, just so that we knew everybody was okay. Mm-hmm. And we knew the status of everybody as well, whether they, you know, were without power, without internet, that kind of thing. And so, you know, just from a company perspective, that was big, because we always knew, you know, how everyone was doing. And that was great. In terms of the actual technical side of things, we prepared for the worst. We knew that a hurricane was coming. We didn't know whether that was going to take Harvest offline, whether there were going to be internet issues, whether there were going to be power issues. We didn't know what was going to happen. And at the time, we didn't have a completely redundant data center set up, although our ops team kind of frantically got to work and built us a redundant data center in the days leading right up to Sandy, just in case we needed to flip the switch over and keep that running. And, you know, it was probably good to prepare for the worst. I wouldn't say the absolute worst happened. I mean, there was no permanent data loss or anything like that, but our data center did go offline for a while. We were down for a few hours throughout Sandy. And certainly a lot of sleepless nights. A lot of our developers and a lot of our ops staff were up for a large stretch of time, you know, sort of manually monitoring things and making sure that things were okay. And you know, at one point we were ready to pull the switch and move over to that backup that we had set up. luckily we didn't have to. Luckily at the last minute things came back. And so that was good. And then, yeah, I guess, you know, the distributed team comes back into play here. The fact that only one of our support people is actually physically located in New York currently. The other support folks, well, at the time there was just the three of us. So there was Scott, who's located in Canmore, Alberta, very far away from hurricane country. In fact, the only thing that he really gets is blizzards in the winter. And then there was myself out here on the West Coast. And funny story was there was actually an earthquake right around the time Hurricane Sandy hit. And so there was a tsunami warning in effect.
Oh,
no tsunami actually hit, but yeah, that was kind of an added stress. I was keeping an eye on that. So, yeah.
So, first, props to your ops team for getting a second data center almost, you know, basically ready to go in a couple of days. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, you
know, that's absolutely phenomenal.
Exceptional. Yeah. Yeah.
So, kind of looking back on the whole thing, is there anything that y'all would have done differently? Is there any kind of words of advice you would have for people that are, you know, maybe they're in New York and in that kind of situation, or they're looking at other kind of, you know, these natural disasters? What's your best advice for people like that that need to have a plan?
Sure. Yeah. Plan ahead. I mean, it's always better to be laying out plans when it's not a crisis. So get things like a communication plan in place. You know, who's going to be the contact, what kind of contact, like what kind of check-ins, what sort of schedule are you going to run with that? And plan as much of that out as you can ahead of time. I mean, redundant data centers, it's expensive. And so if you're a small company and you're just getting started, I can understand the hesitation on that. But, you know, if you can make that work, do it. And try and keep them geographically separate. Hire remotely. I seem to be kind of like, you know, saying this a lot, but
you are definitely the remote champion.
Yeah. I mean, well, living where I do, I have no chance of a job in technology if there were no remote workers in this world. Like, living on this island, there is no high tech on this island. I have a cable modem and that's about as high tech as it gets. That's for sure. And I had another point and it's just floated right out of my head.
It's gone.
Yeah. We may have to let that one go.
It's all right. It's all right. Yeah. I think like you mentioned, the plan is the big thing. Don't get caught flat footed because that's kind of the worst time to be making a plan, trying to figure out what to do is, you know, while there's this hurricane bearing down on you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right, cool. Last question, because I know you got stuff to do. Tell me about the best customer service, the best customer support you got. And I tell everyone that the catch on this one is that it's you as the customer. So you're receiving this outstanding customer service.
You bet. It's so easy to talk about the best customer service you've ever provided, isn't it?
Yeah, it's too easy. I tried that and I realized, nah, let's flip that.
Yeah, the best customer support I always get is anytime I'm shopping locally, really. Anytime I shop at any of the small stores that are around the island or, you know, at some of the cities close by. And it's I found that, you know, that is really sort of the example that I strive for. Harvest can be a big company, but we want to try and make it feel like a small company to every customer in that, you know, each of those people matters to us. Each of those customers is a paying customer, or, you know, maybe they're one of our free customers, but at the same time, everyone's equal. And, you know, we want to treat them like they're special. We want them to feel like their problem is the most important problem that we're dealing with at that time. And so for a specific example, I've had a love-hate relationship with my current coffee grinder. it broke down on me. After I'd had it for 2 weeks, turns out it was a design flaw. What I did was I contacted the company that made it. I'll leave company names out of this just, you know, to protect the guilty.
Yeah,
contacted the company that made it and they told me to return it to the store where I bought it and exchange it. So I, living on a small island can be a complicated thing sometimes. I usually have to catch a boat in order to accomplish certain things. And so the next time I was headed over to town, I caught a boat, went over to town, returned the coffee grinder, or tried to return the coffee grinder, and the store told me that, well, no, this company only accepts direct returns. They don't work through the retailers. They need you to mail it in. So I got back home, still with the coffee grinder in hand, called up the company again, said, you know, what's going on here? And the rep was extremely apologetic, but said that, you know, for this particular item, because it's below a certain dollar amount, I am supposed to deal directly with the store. So that rep sent me an email, you know, with their contact information, direct contact information, that kind of thing, which I could print out and then take into the store. And I did that, and the store, you know, happily exchanged the coffee grinder on the spot, was, again, sorry for the runaround. And yeah, I mean, it just turned out to be a positive experience. There was a bit of a runaround, but, you know, that happens occasionally. And as long as you're patient and they're patient with you, then it all works.
That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. Yeah. Also, it's awesome that you take a boat to get to town. Just saying.
Well, sort of awesome.
I guess that could be inconvenient at certain times.
Yeah. Yeah. The boats stop running past a certain point. So, you know, going to catch dinner and a movie doesn't exactly work out all that often.
Oh, man. If you're like the movie runs late or dinner runs late and there the boat goes and you're just, that would be rough.
Exactly. Yeah. It's got its challenges.
Well, John, it's been absolutely fantastic talking to you. Thanks for being on the show.
You too, Chase. It was my pleasure.
That means episode 20 is in the books. You can reach out to John on Twitter where he's at John_C_Lane. He's also on the web at flyingtroll.com, which is a great name for a website. Absolutely love it. Show notes are up at supportops.co/podcast. And if you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. All you have to do is search for Support Ops Podcast up there in the search bar. Thanks again for listening. I'm Chase. And until we talk again, have an awesome week.